Hey everyone, welcome to the Snapcast. Rob here yet again, and I'm joined by Drew. Drew, you're back, and I think we're going to keep you on board. You did really well last week. We enjoyed having you, getting a lot of good feedback, and excited to bring you on part of the team.
Great to hear it. Yeah, I'd love to stay on for this podcast for the time being moving forward. It's a great outlet for me to talk about magic, and that's one thing I love doing is talking about magic.
Absolutely. It's an absolute blast. But we have someone, not to diminish you at all, significantly more important with us. Today, we're joined by the wonderful special guest, Julian John. Julian, you have, I'm going to brag about you here for a minute. You have multiple top eights in the Grand Prix scene, both in Oklahoma, just destroying it there, 2019, 2017, in both Modern and Standard, earning you to a Pro Tour and a Players Tour invite because the system did change. You were a Bronze Pro. You have multiple top 64s on the Grand Prix circuit. But your accolades don't just end there. You are a top 10 Planeswalker points holder in 2019. 2018, you were the number one Planeswalker point earner, and in 2017, the number two. Now, majority of your time, you were dedicated to the Star City circuit as part of Team Lotus Box, and you balanced the two between the Star City scene and the Grand Prix scene after your departure from Team Lotus Box. But while you're with them, though, on the Star City scene, you had five top eights on the open circuit, and you were actually the second fastest to go from zero top eights to five top eights. You did it in less than a year. It's like 11 months and I believe 2 weeks, which is an outstanding feat. You finished eighth place on the leaderboard in 2018. In Magic Online, though, you continue to be a premier player of 2020. You're in the top 20 for the win percentage with Izzet and Mono Red Prowess, as well as Saheeli Cat, Rakdos Shadow. And then you were also...
I've been a trophy leader for...
Congrats on all of that, and welcome to the show, Julian.
Thanks. That was quite the introduction. I do have to say so myself. I'm pretty honored and humbled to be here. I really appreciate the invite.
You have dedicated a lot of time to Magic.
I'm in love with the game, for sure. Yeah.
And that's what we're here to talk about. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Everyone has their own story, how they got into Magic and what their background is. We've covered mine multiple times. Drew, we talked about yours last week and how we started playing Magic together when we were stationed on the same sub down in Kings Bay, Georgia. But Julian, let's hear your story.
Okay, so my story is actually pretty new. In 2016, my sophomore year of college, me and my best friend at the time, I was living in Arkansas. We were pretty into video games. I've been a pretty big video gamer my whole life. I felt like video games in person were a little disconnecting comparatively to card games or board games. So I asked my friend at the time if he wanted to get into any board games or anything like that. And I also mentioned that when I was a kid, I was playing Yu-Gi-Oh! I recommended that we try to pick that up. And he was like, we should play Magic instead because it's a better game, after he did his research on Reddit. And so we went to Walmart and we picked up some starter decks and we went on YouTube. And I remember we were watching MTG Degree. He's one of my favorite content creators. He was explaining the game of Magic and the color wheel. And he was saying that the goal of Magic was to get your opponent down to zero life as fast as possible. And he said that Red did that in the fastest way possible. So from my inception of playing Magic, I always had a huge affinity for being as proactive with the game plan of winning as possible. And so I built a Red deck when I first started playing. And then from there, I went to the local game store in Arkansas, and I found that there was a really huge community there that was really passionate. And through a couple mentors, shortly after I started playing Magic, in 2016, after Eldritch Moon had just came out, a month later, I top aided an invitational with LSV's Bant Company deck from Shadows over Innistrad. Shortly thereafter that, I won an IQ with Bant Spirits, sending me to an invitational where I found a lot of passion for tournament play. I have a background in sports, so competition to me was the biggest outlets of my life. So about 6 months after I started playing Magic, at my third open, I was playing Esper Aggro, the weekend that Heart of Kieran came out, and the Saheeli combo deck was really popular. So I basically pivoted my Esper aggro deck to be really good against Saheeli and found myself 10th on Breakers. And 9th place was Zan Syed, one of my best friends. He invited me to Lotus Box. From there, I was just mentored by some really, really impressive Magic players who helped me go from amateur to someone dominating the SCG Tour in 2018 and taking those lessons every tournament I've ever played. I would like to attribute to my friends who helped me hone those skills. And it's really funny, just a year prior to being on Team Lotus Box, I was sitting in calculus class at Mizzou, and there was this girl sitting next to me who I had a crush on, and she was telling me about how our calc teacher, who's Caleb Shearer actually, he had this tattoo on his arm, and she was like, "Do you know what that is?" And I was like, "What is that, like Neptune's Triton?" And she was like, "No, that's like the Magic the Gathering symbol." And I was like, "Magic the Gathering? What is that?" And I can't believe that, like, a year later from that day, I was actually top eighting a team open with Caleb Shearer on the SCG Tour. I mean, that's how I kind of got into Magic, how I progressed from a newer player. I met the right people, and I was able to dedicate immense amount of time to Magic to help me find success on the SCG Tour. I've come a little short from my expectations in terms of the Pro Tour scene. However, I'm still growing, I'm still learning. There's still opportunities to capitalize on my aspirations of joining the highest levels of competitive play through, I would say, the MPL, the Hall of Fame. Those have always been my aspirations. And so one of the biggest reasons why I wasn't only playing SCGs was because I've always wanted to be in the Hall of Fame. And so I had to dedicate a lot of my time to the Grand Prix circuit, and I came up short of silver for about a year straight. So I kind of bricked really hard getting another Pro Tour qualification, but I'm very hopeful about the future of Magic, and I find myself leveling up exponentially through dedicated Moto play, which is currently the evolution of Magic for me due to recent world events. However, it was just 1 year ago I found myself in Nagoya, which is like a dream to me that I got to go to Japan because of Magic. And I just can't wait until the end of this year when I'll hopefully be able to continue traveling the world, proving myself to be one of the most dedicated Magic players in the world. I can't wait to emulate that. So that's where I'm at right now on my journey of Magic.
So that's really interesting to me that you say you've fallen short of your expectations as someone who's been playing for what it sounds like less than 5 years. What do you think feeds that drive in you to, you know, be the best in the world?
It's always about being the best version of yourself and knowing the steps that you need to take to get there look like quantifiable results, right? And so I have only 2 Pro Tour appearances. And in order for me to reach my accolades, the places I want to be, like, let's say MPL level, Hall of Fame level, I need to be dominating more on the Pro Tour scene. So hopefully I can qualify for Rivals. I'm going to be making a push full time for content creation and the dedication to qualify for the MPL this year. And hopefully I can one day look back on this podcast and say, you know, look, mama, we made it. I'm on the MPL. I'm in the Hall of Fame. I'm doing it. I'm one of the best players to ever grace the game. That dedication comes from my foundation of sports, and through sports, you know, you want to be the best, you want to play against the best, and you want to beat the best. So it's just a natural byproduct of being a pure warrior spirit, I would say.
So what is your background in sports?
Yeah, so I have a black belt in Taekwondo. That's probably one of the most dedicated extracurriculars I've had in my life. I'm a huge, huge soccer player. I used to play for Sporting Columbia, which is an affiliate of Sporting KC when I went to high school in Missouri. In Florida, I was trained professionally in tennis and golf. I also have broken state records in track and volleyball. yeah, sports are a huge part of my life. They always have been. And this is just another really important extracurricular sport outlet of competition that I have been embarking on. And the dedication that I have for Magic has probably only been paralleled by my dedication for COD and FIFA as other games that aren't sports. In my life, I would say I'm probably, like, I've been number one in the world in Team Deathmatch in 2011. And I used to be ranked, my peak MLG rank on Game Battles was 555th. And I was top page Game Battles for about 3 Call of Duties in a row. And then from there, it was a progression to FIFA. I would say I was one of the better FIFA players in my hometown in Missouri. Dedicated a lot of time to FIFA and was D1 in Ultimate Team for a couple years. And as a natural progression to how much I love gaming, I would say I'm one of the hardest working Magic players in the world.
I was going to say, like, your dedication of everything that you have gone after, you don't settle. And that is a huge attribute in making it in the pro level of Magic the Gathering. When you talk to all of the people that are up there at that level, your Hall of Famers, and that it is the dedication, the mindset, the drive of being able to continue to push and push, because nothing comes easy. And you've shown through both mental and physical challenges, that being black belt Taekwondo, and also your state record. So when it comes to track, like, that is a lot of stress that you put on yourself, and you're able to handle it, focus your energy, and succeed. And that is only a testament to the accolades you have here in Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, the foundations I have definitely helped me strive and acquire the attributes necessary to compete at the highest level, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually thrive. And everything I do has allowed me to exude that passion for life through the outlets and hobbies and extracurriculars that I have passion for. And I'm just truly blessed to be able to even be here right now talking about my journey. I'm really appreciative you guys invited me here, and I hope that I can continue this progression forward.
So it looks like a lot of your top results have been these team series. Has your background contributed to your success in that at all? And what advice would you have for people trying to take on that endeavor in the future?
Yeah, so I have 5 SCG Open Top 8s, and 4 of them were team events, including one open win. And I would say a huge aspect of my foundation with sports is the team chemistry aspect, with the exception of, like, golf. But even in golf, you work with other people. But, yeah, the team chemistry aspect is a huge, huge proponent of succeeding when it comes to tournament Magic success. One thing I thrive at, being a really, really good cheerleader for my friends and those around me in every facet of, you know, mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual growth, right? So before a tournament starts, I'm making sure everyone has had the proper preparation, the proper diets, the proper physical balance that they need to have mental clarity to be able to perform optimally when it comes to game time. You know, I'll be there before the round starting, hyping my team up, making sure we're doing, like, knuckle touches, saying good luck throughout the tournament, always hyping up my teammates, making sure team chem is up, just giving us the optimal emotional clarity that we need to execute. I would say that's a huge part of team tournaments, is making sure you guys are one, if you will.
So when you travel to these events, do you have any rituals as far as being able to execute optimally?
It's very important to me to cram the night before, but also balance testing with a good night's sleep, a good dinner, a good breakfast, especially the preparation beforehand. So rituals on every level are necessary to succeed in tournament Magic, I would say. During the tournament, fasting is a really good, I would say, activity to participate in. It helps keep your brain, not your body, not working too hard so that your brain can thrive. Meditation, for me, is a huge part of making sure I succeed in Magic tournaments. Keeping every aspect of my mental game clear so that I have no distractions. And usually throughout an entire weekend of a Magic tournament, after every round, I'm always conversing with my teammates or friends about Magic strategy, because I would say my technical play is still something I'm harnessing to compete with the highest players in the world. And so I'm always trying to learn. I'm constantly learning, even during a Magic tournament. So that's basically how I spend the majority of my time not playing Magic, is going over plays, asking for advice on certain theories, ideas, and just keeping mental notes of every aspect of Magic in a tournament, for sure.
So what type of preparation would you say you place into these events? So like from, say, the event's over, you have an event the next week or maybe 2 weeks from now. What would be your typical routine in preparing for an event?
Communicating with friends playing Magic online or in paper is a predominant part of my day. Whenever I was taking Magic as seriously as possible full time, I would probably say I would spend hours upon hours a day preparing on every level, getting in a Discord call or Google Hangouts, playing Magic online with four or five people at the same time, consuming not just one game of Magic, but multiple games of Magic at once, bouncing ideas off of people. That's like the biggest part of being a successful Magic player, I would say, would be making sure your network is on the same wavelength as you and making sure you're learning and accelerating your learning by bouncing ideas off of other people.
So what would you say has contributed to you having such a successful network? That seems like a skill that maybe you have and have caught on to in a much quicker manner than a lot of people that have tried doing this.
Well, my friends like to tell me that like my superpower is social extroversion, and I just like sharing my light with people. And as a natural byproduct of just being there for people, allows me to spend my time sharing what I'm passionate about with people who are also equally as passionate, and just bouncing ideas in very constructive ways. I mean, I basically treated Magic like it was like I was going to Hogwarts, if you will, for the last couple of years. And high levels of education require high levels of bouncing ideas off of people. Information sharing, the experiences I've learned from traveling for Magic and spending time with people are the best parts of my life, I would say. You know, it's just an unparalleled level of adventuring that I've partaken in the last couple of years, and I just wouldn't trade it for anything else. And that emotional awareness of those experiences has been the driving force for my success. It's just being in love with what I do on every single level.
So I know a lot of the people that have been this dedicated to Magic lately seem to be stepping out of the game. Is there anything in particular with the game itself that has caused you to stick around?
Yeah, I mean, this game is just one of the best games I've ever played. When I was 7 years old, I would buy Yu-Gi-Oh cards, and I also had the Pokemon trading card game on my Game Boy. And I stopped playing Yu-Gi-Oh when I was 11, and haven't really played a trading card game until I turned 19. But ever since I turned 19, I realized that like trading card games were just unparalleled with the amount of fun that you could have, because the aspect of Magic that is just so appealing to me is the infinite permutations of puzzle solving that goes on. Like, it's an ever-evolving game that requires infinite learning. And so I love learning with games like FIFA and games like COD. I felt like I've mastered those games to the best of my ability, but with Magic, I feel like it's a game that requires almost infinite mastering of.
So would you say that's what sets Magic apart from those other trading card games? As someone that doesn't have any background in anything like Yu-Gi-Oh or Pokemon, I know a lot of people see Magic on a surface level and be like, oh, that's just like Yu-Gi-Oh. What would you say sets Magic apart from those style of games?
I think from a structural perspective, Magic is just an inherently better game on every level. I've talked to many Pokemon players, and basically Pokemon is pigeonholed into being combo centric, like Dredge. It's like Dredge versus Storm, and in the same regard it's Dredge versus Storm in Yu-Gi-Oh, whereas Magic is something that can't be pigeonholed inherently by the way that the game is structured. It just has better gameplay mechanics, it has more diversity overall with the formats you can play, and the people, the community overall, I find to be just a very beautiful community.
I agree with you on that. I've looked into playing games such as like Legends of Runeterra, and it just seems like the resources available to pick up those games are just not nearly on par with the with Magic. Magic just has so much resources to learn with.
Yeah, it has a lot to offer. It also has the richest history of trading card games. It's like the grandfather.
All right, so you have extensive experience in both Modern and Standard. About a week and a half ago now, about almost 2 weeks, we have seen the Modern world get completely shaken up with the sweeping bans that occurred. We saw Mystic Sanctuary, Field of the Dead, Uro, Simian Spirit Guide, and Tibalt Trickery all get banned. Just real briefly, what are your thoughts on these bans? Were these better for the format? Were some cards unjustly banned? What do you think?
Well, I think it's no surprise to anyone that the power creep has kind of pigeonholed a majority of the formats into being pretty streamlined in terms of power level and what you can play. And Modern has been sort of dominated by Euro strategies, Mystic Sanctuary, Midrange Blue, Field of the Dead, and then recently Tobolt, Cascade shells for a long time, right? And allowing the format to breathe by banning these extremely power-crept cards to take a sideline has opened Modern up to basically where it was before those mid-range decks were dominating. And I'm seeing a lot more Tier 2 and Tier 3 strategies in the Modern queues, whereas before, the Premier Events, Challenges, and Modern Leagues were a lot of Mystic Sanctuary, Euro, Omnath, Field of the Dead, Tibalt, Cosmic Imposter, Valky, if you will, strategies. And the deck I've been playing since July of last year has been able to keep up with all of those decks. And why I felt like this deck, I think I said in August or October that Is It Prowess was the best deck in Modern. Why I said that was because I felt like this was the only deck that could compete with every deck in the format other than those Euro strategies.
So talk to us about this deck. What kind of gave you the idea to kind of pioneer this deck in a sense? And what do you think inherently makes this one of the better options in Modern, both now and moving forward?
Well, a huge catalyst to the deck was an upgrade from Mono Red Prowess to Is It Prowess when Stormwing Entity was printed in M21. Stormwing Entity with Mana Morphos on turn 2 being a 5 CMC spell is something that evades Fatal Push. Otherwise, if this deck didn't have a way to beat Fatal Push in that sense, I feel like Rakdos Shadow would probably be the go-to aggro deck of the format. This deck is a progression of Mono Red in the sense that Mono Red is extremely linear. It's extremely proactive, but pretty weak to combo decks that don't need to worry about Mono Red decks crushing them on turn 4 and turn 5 by winning the game on like turn 3. However, Is It Prowess is able to attack on a different axis in a similar way that Death Shadow decks can attack with discard and interact with combo decks in that way. This deck gets to play permission spells. And permission spells can be incidentally better than discard spells, but overall I think this deck with the Prowess package and then the introduction of Sprite Dragon and Storming Entity is almost the evolution of what Arclight Phoenix was a couple years ago. Sprite Dragon and Storming Entity are almost inherent build your own Arclight Phoenixes, because Arclight Phoenix thrived sometimes as a 4 mana 3/2, whereas these creatures are following similar power levels at 2 drops.
So would you say that Modern has kind of surpassed the power level of Arclight Phoenix now with these other options?
I mean, yes and no. It's taken a step back by the banning of Faithless Looting by being inherently broken combo deck. But yes, in the sense that these new flying iterations have kind of been carrying weight. I started playing this game with Banned Spirits, and flying then was a huge catalyst to tournament success for me, and flying now is still just carrying me along, I would say.
Are you of the mind that is it Phoenix or is it Prowess is always the go-to option, at least for you, or are there certain metas where you would prefer to play mono red or Rakdos or even Boros?
I think all are viable as the modern metagame wheel progresses. However, I think currently is it Blitz is very well positioned because of the way that permission interacts as a catch-all in a way that Thoughtseize and Inquisition can't, because sometimes, you know, you Thoughtseize and Inquisition someone and they can just out top deck you and you're down a lot of tempo. But with permission spells, you know, you're interacting on the stack, the game is on your terms, and you're catching everything. And when you pair that with, in my opinion, proactiveness being the best way to play Magic, in the sense that if you're looking at a card pool, right, and you're playing, for example, a control deck, you're really pigeonholing yourself by having to concentrate your deck building restraints on the way that you think you should be preparing for a metagame. And in Modern, that's just not something that's extremely viable with a card pool so large. But when you're the one knocking on the door and asking the questions and then allowing tempo to cover your bases, you're just going to be playing, as we can see in Legacy with Izzet Delver's domination over the last couple years, pretty much as close to tier zero as you possibly can. In Modern, one mana is unparalleled levels of card advantage and tempo. And with Mana Morphos and Mishra's Bauble and Death Shadow Sense, zero mana is where you should be. So I also like Dredge as a good proactive deck in that sense, that using mana as aggressively as possible and efficiently as possible is where you want to be. Burn, similar wavelength, 1 and 2 mana spells, and Shadow, 1 mana spells are king.
So I'm looking at your deck list right now, and while we're on the subject of 1 mana spells, I played a league with your list right before the show. One card I was particularly impressed with was Vapor Snag. What brought you to the conclusion to include that in the list?
I would say that I predicted post-banning of Your Own Friends that Death Shadow and Death and Taxes would be really, really popular. And just creature strategies in general would thrive in the new modern metagame. So I wanted to include Vapor Snag to deal with rough, big, fatty shadows and pro-red creatures. And just, I mean, really, if your opponent ever spends 3 mana on a creature and you get to Vapor Snag it, you're just miles ahead. So Vapor Snag is a huge boon to the archetype.
Yeah, I think one application that I loved it against was a Wyrmcoil Engine, with the Tron decks playing 3 to 4 of those in the main board, and Oriok Champion.
Yeah, I mean, if you're outvaluing your opponent with, you're up 5 mana with your 1 mana creatures, crushing them on the early turns they're setting up, those decks have just no chance in Modern, in my opinion.
And then another particular interaction I thought was really good was the Vapor Snag and Light Up the Stage interaction. When you bounce a creature, you can deal 1 damage to your opponent, which turns on Light Up the Stage, and now you don't have to go to face with one of your burn spells. You can save it for one of their creatures later on, and you can still get the trigger off the Light Up the Stage spectacle.
I agree. It's very, very good. There are other cards that fill similar roles to Vapor Snag, and that of like Stern Dismissal. It interacts well with enchantments, which can really help the Helion matchup. Interacts with Hardened Scales, interacts with Phyrexian Unlife, just has niche implications, but the 1 mana is very, very good. Or the 1 damage is very, very good. And it also can help bounce your own creatures, which is very important against Path and Push.
Yeah, Path seemed to be one of the most problematic cards I went up against in that league that I played, because you can't just protect it with like a mutagenic growth. like he would be for Bolt.
Yeah, Vapor Snag helps fill an Apostle's role, Apostle's Blessing role in that sense. A little tempo, a lot more tempo negative, but on a similar wavelength for sure.
In a deck like this, when you're only running, what, about 17 creatures or so, you need to have some form of incidental protection. And being able to identify a spell that can do both, the tool of enabling spectacle and light up the stage, or protecting your creature, that is another one of those moves that just kind of helps you progress to that next level of being able to have a multi-use card in your deck.
Right, yeah. I would say Vapor Snag was a huge, huge level up to the deck. And I would say Serum Visions over Opt is also a huge level up to the deck in terms of cohesiveness. Looking at three cards, that along with Storming Entity scrying abilities have just really been able to, for me, to gas up my following turns, where it's very important for you to set up your turn three and turn four kills with this deck through making sure your prowess creatures have enough food to go off. The deck has a very high turn three, and being able to find more cards can really, really add on to that percentage.
Yeah, and along with those scry abilities, one of the things I'd like to point out too for people maybe new to this deck or new to Magic in general is once you've scryed two, you want to hold off on the fetch land, because that's going to nullify what you just scryed. I know I almost caught myself doing that in this deck, and I just kind of had to hold off a turn on fetching my lands after the scry.
Yeah, or you know, you can leave your fetch lands around in case you need to change your scries up based off of what your opponents are doing. Yeah, fetch lands have huge implications in Modern for sure.
Exactly. All right, so you had a recent top eight in the Modern Challenge this weekend. What'd you see in the metagame, and how'd you feel about this deck? I know you got top eight, so you probably feel pretty good, but what thoughts do you have on it based off what you saw?
Pretty similar to the opinion I've had of the deck for a long time now, is I feel like it's pretty much the best deck in Modern. I mean, there are a whole lot of decks extremely cold to Monastery Swift Spear, and when you pair Monastery Swift Spear with Permission and you're tempoing your opponent out with Metamorphoses and Mutagenic Growths countering opposing Bolts for free, and Sprite Dragon and Storming Entity coming over the top on early turns, you know, your turn threes are really consistent, your creatures are hard to interact with, the deck has a lot of trick to it, sideboard has a lot of clean answers to a lot of problematic things in the format that certain linear strategies, like I would say Mono Red Prowess, just can't interact with. The deck has really no bad matchups opposed to about Burn, and I would say the Heliod matchup is a pretty hard matchup. Those were my only two losses over the weekend. I would say Boggles is a pretty hard matchup, and I would say Death Shadow can be problematic, but you can really tune the deck to have pretty close to 50-50 matchups against, I would say, all of those decks, making Is It Blitz, in my opinion, the best deck in Modern.
Yeah, it definitely does seem the most interchangeable as far as being able to tune it for whatever you need it to. It's not completely linear like a lot of the decks in Modern are. It's very sculptable. And I would agree with you on Burn. Those were my two losses in the league, both to Burn. But like you were saying, it feels winnable.
Yeah, if you want to like interchange Aether Gust to be slightly weaker against your green matchups like Titan and Heliod, and you want to change those back into Dragon's Claws, I would never fault you for that. Dragon's Claw is super good in the mirror, as well as extremely good against Burn, and would really shore up those loose percentage points for you for sure. But make sure that you are staying in tune with the Vapor Snag tech to be able to interact with pro red creatures from Burn and Heliod Company for sure. Really, really good against most of the top contenders.
So what would you consider the top contenders moving forward then?
I believe Dredge is good again in Modern. I like Dredge a lot. Humans is very good. Burn, very good. I like Rakdos Shadow a lot. I think Grixis Shadow also has a lot of viability to it. I think with all that being said, obviously Chalice of the Void gained some growth back into the format. So I would think that Eldrazi Tron could climb the ranks back on the pantheon of Modern excellence. And then obviously you always have the Teferi Time Raveler decks. sitting on the pantheon of modern, just in how, because of how inherently broken that card is and how it kind of eradicates a large percentage of the card pool in modern. And Force of Negation as a sidekick to Teferi really, really pigeonholes the format a lot. And I think Blitz has a pretty good matchup against Izzet Control, or against Azorius Control, when you hedge for it with multiple spell pierces and you throw some Mystical Disputes back in the deck if you want to void some spell pierce slots. But yeah, I mean, modern's pretty healthy, in my opinion, pretty creature oriented, and mid-range decks can kind of balance that, and then the control decks kind of balance that. So it's a pretty healthy rock paper scissory format, but I think Izzet Blitz is sitting at the very tip top, and that is definitely true if we're looking at MTG Goldfish stats. It sits at 7.1% of the meta, with Burn being the second most played deck at 4.5% of the meta.
Yeah, I was definitely impressed with it in the league I was playing. I guess I have 2 days to register for the Mana Trader series. I've been going pretty hard on humans. I wrote an article about it this week. I got top 32 in the modern challenge with it, but it's just doing human-y things. Like, it just mulligans very poorly. There's some inherent flaws to humans that something like Blitz doesn't have. You see a lot more cards with Izzet Blitz, and that's something I like a lot.
A huge reason why Izzet Blitz is so good is because of Lava Dart, and a lot of the matchups where Lava Dart thrives, being able to trade off against your nobles and your champions and your Thalias pretty cleanly, mm-hmm. definitely lets humans sit behind it in modern. And then Lava Dart just having implications in many other matchups as well, against Birds of Paradise, Arbor Elves, keeps spirits in check, keeps Dredge in check, and
keeps
it really
Heliod in check.
Keeps Heliod in check for sure. However, their inherent Splinter Twin combo has been pretty cumbersome for me to deal with. And so right now, my evolution from this weekend flex spot in that of the Royal Scions that I had hedging for Jundin Blue-White, I turned it into a Pirate Spellbomb for the NRG event the following day. Got pretty dominated by an 8-rack deck on camera I wasn't really preparing for, but I felt like the Spellbomb was a good hedge for Auriok Champion. And my train of thought was I wanted to have more interaction for the Spike Feeder, but having two pieces of interaction for a Spike Feeder with the Heliod out isn't as clean as where I'm sitting at with my flex spot now, which is that in that of Pithing Needle, just completely turning off Spike Feeder and then being able to fairly compete with the deck as a green mid-range deck is a lot more viable of a strategy to approach the matchup, for sure.
So are you bringing Pithing Needle in exclusively for Heliod, or are there other matchups that it's worth bringing into?
It's definitely predominantly for Spike Feeder, but it has implications in many, many matchups, for sure.
This is a question I have for both of y'all. Since you've played in a lot of modern events recently, the multiple leagues, the challenges, the energy event, do you believe what you are seeing is now what modern is going to be as a meta, or are we entering more of a Wild West of modern, if you will, again, where you can take the deck that you know, go to an event, and expect to do pretty decently well?
So me personally, I think everyone's still trying to find something that's going to break the meta. But at the same time, this weekend was a perfect opportunity for everyone to play their pet decks that maybe they haven't been able to play in a long time because of Uro or Mystic Sanctuary. So now that people have a little bit more data to go off, I expect there to be quite a bit more experimentation moving forward. But if there isn't something that's just going to outright break the meta, then I could also see modern kind of going back to what it was in these last couple of years.
Yeah, harping on that, I think the format is pretty open again. It's not as restrained as it was before with the power creep that had been kind of keeping modern in at bay, but now feels a lot more fresh. And I feel like everyone is roaming again in the way that they did in the pastures, with the way that they have historically been playing modern pre-Euro. Like I said, I really, really like, I would say tier one looks like Izzet, Prowess, Burn, Blue-White, Dredge, the Heliod decks, Humans, Shadow, some sleepers on the cusp of tier one. Tier two to me would probably be Amulet Titan, I think, still is a really, really good deck. Those Azusa starts in turn two, turn three Titans with Amulet are still some of the best things you could be doing in Modern. I think Hammer Time sits on the cusp of Tier 1. I don't think it's quite as dominating as it appears to be on MTG Goldfish percentages, meta share rates. I think the deck has inherently uninteractable starts from a lot of decks, but the deck, what it's doing is inherently broken, as I think it's piped out to be. I really like E-tron sitting on the cusp of that list as well. And I think Grixis Shadow and Tron are making their way back into the meta, which they were kind of, I would say Tron especially was pretty much slept on for a long time. However, I believe the Force of Negation decks and aggro decks will continue to be tier one while Tron sits on tier two. I think Boggles is a good counter for the meta. If aggro is prevailing, Boggles is an aggro deck that is pretty hard to interact with any of the decks I've been talking about in the aggro sense. Like even Death Shadow can get leylined out from Boggles. So I think Ingress Rampage would be a good way to counteract that going forward from that deck. And I think in terms of prowess for how it can adapt to Modern shaping up into this new world is I think cards like Brazen Borrower and Mystical Dispute are going to see more play in the deck, in the shell. And I could see four Mutagenic Growths being a good way to counter the burn decks. However, it's important to keep in mind the anemicness of Mutagenic Growth against like Shadow. An important inclusion in my list in Modern's encompassing metagame is to talk about how I don't play Gutshot, which a lot of people like to play. And that's really for a concession to Oriok Champion, Death Shadow, Scourge of the Skyclave, and then having a really big game against some of the big CMC value creatures that you can hit with the addition of main deck Vapor Snags. Gutshot is pretty good in a vacuum. However, I think it's sometimes it feels like a mulligan in a lot of matchups. And you pull enough weight with Lava Darts and Burst Lightnings sitting behind, I think, with the best card in Modern, Lightning Bolt. That's a huge reason as to why I don't play Gutshot, is I feel like it's too anemic of an inclusion when you want to be hedging for those Oriok Champions and those Shadows as some of the only contenders to really throw you off the throne with prowess. And I think, yeah, Mystical Dispute would be a huge boon going forward, because I think once the format settles down and the ways that I'm predicting it will settle down similarly to how it was before, that the blue decks will figure out how to iron out their 75s to be able to compete again on an extremely tier one level.
What are you looking at that you would want to take, bring in Mystical Dispute over Spellpierce?
So you'd probably just like cut the second Cozy's Return. You would probably cut this Pithing Needle as the 15th flex spot. This additional Vapor Snag would probably need to be trimmed, and then you would probably want to like look at your blue permission package as like two Spell Pierce, two Aether Gust, two Mystical Disputes. Or if you want to have these Aether Gust as Dragon's Claws, you would probably want to play Aether Gust, Mystical Dispute, and Dragon's Claw, cutting the Spell Pierces. But I think cutting Spell Pierce is how you find yourself coming full circle to be weak. Too entirely weak again against like Chalice of the Voids and then the Unlifes of the format, the Sylvan Scryings of the format, the cards that you really, really need to hedge for when Modern is so fast-paced. Those early turns countering that one key combo setup spell just really puts you in the driver's seat paired with your prowess creatures knocking on the door as proactively as Modern will allow.
I know me personally moving forward, I'm definitely going to test a little bit more with this Is It Blitz list, looking forward to the weekend. Humans I've put in a lot of work with, as I previously stated, but it's got some inherent problems, so I might be holding off on that. One deck that really intrigues me that you talked about earlier is Dredge, something I've played with in the past, and I was talking with Sodic a couple nights ago on his stream, and he said that he has not run into like any Leyline of the Voids. So I think if people are bringing in soft hate, such as like the Soul Guide Lantern, that you have here. I don't think people are respecting Dredge enough, and I think it might be a good choice for this weekend.
Yeah, I think if you would want to really shore up your Dredge matchup, we would probably be throwing some Surgicals back into the list with the addition of Ley Lines to really clean up the Dredge crew. But game one, I believe Prowess is heavily favored against Dredge with like Lava Darts. And if you ever get to basically the matchups where Mutagenic Growth gets to counterspell something are like the easiest wins I found in the format. So if Dredge ever tries to like conflag a Storming Entity, and the next turn you just hit him with the flurry of Lava Darts and Manamorphoses with like one other creature, that's a really huge play against Dredge. And in a lot of matchups, I mean, the best starts look like turn one Swift Spear, turn two Morphos Stormwing, set up a turn three turn with max efficiency and free spells like Muta, Lava Dart, Manamorphose, light up the stage, Prowess Training, etc., etc.
I heard Aspiring Spike say last week that he thinks Monastery Swift Spear is low key has been the best creature in Modern. How do you feel about that?
I've put away a lot of decks in Modern because I felt like they just could never beat or compete with Monastery Swift Spear starts in meaningful ways in a lot of game one configurations and post board configurations, still having a hard time setting up their own game plans effectively while dealing with Swift Spear starts. And another thing is not to sleep on Sprite Dragon. Pretty sure I was the first person that played for Sprite Dragon in this deck a couple months ago. Sprite Dragon is just so broken. It's played in Legacy. This deck is very close to Legacy. And so if you want to look for ways to make this deck better, one thing I found myself doing a lot has been emulating the Legacy lists as close as I possibly can. And that's what I felt like I've done to this point, and how I've gained a lot of success with the list is trying to get as close to Legacy as I possibly can. And I felt like that's been a huge strategy for a lot of successful decks in Modern in the past, is to be as Legacy oriented as possible.
Yeah, I think not only Legacy, but another thing to look into is the standard decks that are just dominating the format. You know, eventually those cards start creeping their way back to Modern, and if you can get an early jump on something like that, I think you put yourself in a good position to win.
Yeah, the power creep level of Sprite Dragon and Storming Entity have been huge boons to recreating the good old days of Arclight Phoenix's domination.
Yeah, I know as a humans player, you know, Red Prowess used to be a matchup I would look forward to, because you know I just take my Oriok champions, you know, maybe they have a Kozilek's Return, maybe they don't, but even if they're wasting three mana on Kozilek's Return, I feel like I'm winning in that scenario.
And now you have your
two
weak
flyers.
You're weak to flyers, you're weak to Vapor Snag, you're
weak
to
Lava Dart, Gut Shot, whatever people want to bring in. It's just like, yeah, just not a good matchup. When I played in the Lotus Bach Octagon today, I played Dylan Donegan, who's just an amazing player, and you know, I wasn't going to get any freebies against him. I think I played pretty well, but these cards just line up so much better against the human cards.
Yeah, and two mana 1/1 gets Vapor Snagged. That's all she wrote.
Yep.
Well, do you guys have anything else you would like to add about Modern based on the events that you've recently played or moving forward, or do you think we got a good grasp so far? Because there's so much going on in Modern right now based on is it Prowess and a little bit we touched on humans.
I would like to add that I think there are still decks where Omnath can gain a footing in the format.
Yeah, and on that note, I would just like to reiterate, I think Modern is completely wide open right now, and if you have a lot of experience in a format or you just absolutely love a deck, now is your time to play it. Now is the time where the power level of the top decks is not going to prevent you from playing really any strategy.
All right, well, I want to thank Julian so much for coming on to the show. It's an absolute honor to have you on. Again, the accolades, I can't lift you up enough on it, and for you to give your time to us and to our listeners too, to learn and see that it is possible to go from someone who has not played the game to being one of the top players. It is not an out-of-reach goal. You just have to work and put the effort into it and surround yourself with people who are positive. They don't have to be pros, just people that will support you and push you to be better. And with all that advice you gave in the beginning in your story and your journey, I thank you for that.
Julian, if someone's trying to find your content in the future, where can they be on the lookout for that?
You can find me on Twitter, isitjj. I also have an Instagram with that same handle. You can find me on Facebook. I go by Julian Alexander John on that social media platform. And then Astral Plane is my Modo username. You can add me on Modo. We're happy to talk to anyone, share anything I know about the game in any way, shape, or form to help anyone I can. I'm going to be taking content creation very seriously full-time. I've just moved to California, and that's my number one goal moving forward with Magic. Anything anyone needs from me, I'm going to be full dedication, full wholeheartedly giving every ounce of my heart and soul to. So don't be afraid to reach out to me. I've got you covered on anything you could possibly want to know about Magic. I don't only play Modern, but I love playing Modern the most, and Standard has gotten stale over the past year, but now that everything's let up and Magic is free again, I'll find myself playing Arena more often, getting into Historic and Standard a lot more. Pioneer and Legacy are something I also love playing, and I've also been finding myself playing a lot of EDH and Vintage Cube, so I'm still growing as a player, and I appreciate all the high praise I've gotten from you guys. Don't worry, I still have a long way to go, and I know that one day all of these accomplishments will pale in comparison to what I can accomplish. So I look forward to talking to you guys then.
Oh, of course, and as do we. And for anybody else who's looking for some wonderful Magic the Gathering content, there's a couple Facebook groups I would highly recommend. First one, Official Masters of Modern, for all of your Modern content. You can find that on Facebook, as well as the MTG Players group on Facebook. From anything to your most basic of questions to your most advanced questions, both of these communities that I've interacted with are very supportive of each other and are more than willing to go out of their way to answer the questions to the best of their ability without the chastising that you may get in some of the other groups on Facebook. Magic the Gathering can sadly be a little bit of a toxic community, but most of your players you will see just want to grow everybody as a player so that the next time they go out and play, it's just a fantastic experience. We have also been recently added to the Red 5 Network. So if you enjoy other sci-fi genres out there as well, primarily Star Wars, check out red5network.com. They have over 15 podcasts dedicated to Star Wars Expanded Universe, and they're going into other sci-fi genres as well. And we were so graciously added as their first Magic the Gathering-based podcast. Our podcast can be found on Spotify, iTunes, Spreaker, and on mtgcast.com, which also hosts a vast number of Magic the Gathering podcasts. You can find us at Team Snapcast on Twitter, as well as on Instagram and Facebook under The Snapcast. But that's going to do it for us here. Thank you guys again for joining us. Have a wonderful day.
God bless.